At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
You click a link. Almost before your finger has lifted off the mouse, a new web page with text, pictures, and even a video starts to load. You open an app on your phone, and instantly, you're watching a live video from a friend who is thousands of miles away on another continent. It feels like magic. It feels instant. Like the information is just floating in the air all around us, waiting for us to grab it. We call it the cloud, a name that makes it sound weightless, invisible, and ethereal. But what if I told you that every single time you do anything online, you are sending and receiving information through a very real, very physical system of wires and cables that stretches for hundreds of thousands of miles across the deepest oceans and busiest continents on Earth? How does that video actually travel from a server in California to your laptop in a matter of seconds? Welcome back to How Does That Work? In today's episode, we're going to demystify the internet. We're going on a physical journey to find out how this seemingly magical network of information actually gets into your house. First, let's get the biggest misconception out of the way. The internet is not a cloud. It is a gigantic physical network of connected computers. At its very heart are countless millions of special computers called servers. A server is just a computer whose main job is to store information, like a website, a video, or your emails, and serve it to other computers when they ask for it. Every website you visit lives on a server somewhere. When you watch a YouTube video, you are asking a Google server to send you that specific video file. These servers are housed in massive air-conditioned buildings called data centers. Think of a data center as a giant digital library, and your click is like asking the librarian to find a specific book and read it to you over the phone. So how does your request get from your house to that data center, which might be on the other side of the world? The answer lies at the bottom of the ocean. The backbones of the global internet are a massive network of fiber optic cables laid across the ocean floor, connecting continents. These are not small wires. They are complex, heavily armored cables, sometimes as thick as a garden hose, designed to withstand deep sea pressure and the occasional shark bite. Inside that thick armor are the real magic makers, bundles of tiny strands of pure glass, each one thinner than a single human hair. Information travels through these glass fibers as pulses of light, flashing on and off billions of times per second. It's like an incredibly fast and complex Morse code made of light, allowing us to send enormous amounts of data at nearly the speed of light. That global network of undersea cables is one of the greatest engineering marvels you've probably never thought about, and building it is a monumental task. The journey begins on land, where the hair-thin glass fibers are bundled together and wrapped in layers of copper, steel, and tough waterproof plastic, creating a final cable that can be as thick as a fire hose. This cable is then carefully spooled onto a gigantic reel inside a specially designed ship, a process that can take weeks. A single ship might carry over 4,000 miles of cable, weighing thousands of tons. Once it's loaded, the ship sets out on a slow and incredibly precise journey across the ocean that can last for months. Laying the cable is a delicate and painstaking process. The ship doesn't just drop it into the water. Near the shore, where the cable is most vulnerable to ship anchors and fishing nets, a special sea plow is lowered to the ocean floor. This plow, which is remotely controlled from the ship, digs a trench in the seabed, carefully laying the cable into it and burying it for protection. Once the ship reaches the deep ocean, where the floor is thousands of feet down and much less disturbed, the cable is usually laid directly onto the flat, abyssal plains. The entire time, the crew must constantly monitor the tension on the cable and the speed of the ship. Going too fast could snap the cable, while going too slow could cause it to tangle. Even after it's laid, the cable faces constant threats from the harsh deep-sea environment. Earthquakes can trigger underwater landslides that snap the cable, and believe it or not, sharks have been known to bite them, possibly because they are attracted to the electromagnetic fields from the copper conductor. When a cable breaks, a repair mission is launched. Specialized ships use robots and grappling hooks to find the two broken ends on the ocean floor, hoist them up to the surface, and then painstakingly splice the tiny glass fibers back together in a sterile clean room on board the ship. This repaired section is then lowered back down to the crushing darkness of the ocean floor, ready to once again carry your emails and videos as tiny pulses of light. Once those pulses of light reach land, they connect to the national internet backbone. The data is routed through a series of major connection points called Internet Exchange Points, or IXPS. Think of an IXP as a massive airport or a giant highway interchange for data. It's a physical place where all the different internet companies, the ones that own the long-haul cables, the big content providers like Netflix and Google, and your local internet service provider, all bring their networks and plug them into each other. This is how a request from a customer of one company can seamlessly get to a server owned by another company. From this major interchange, the data is sent through more fiber optic cables to a smaller regional hub or office owned by your internet service provider, or ISP, the company you pay for your internet connection every month. But this raises a mind-boggling question. With millions of people sending emails, streaming movies, and playing games all at the same time, how does the internet keep all that information from becoming a single chaotic mess? How does your video file travel on the exact same fiber optic cable as your neighbor's video call without getting mixed up? The answer is a brilliant system of organization governed by a set of rules or protocols called TCP/IP. The best way to understand it is to think of the entire internet as a global postal service. When you want to watch a video, the server doesn't send the whole massive file to you in one big chunk. Instead, it acts like a machine that takes the video and chops it up into thousands of tiny bite-sized pieces called packets. Each packet is then placed into its own digital envelope, turning it into something like a digital postcard. This postcard has all the information needed for its journey. It has a to address, your computer's unique IP address, and a from address, the server's IP address. Most importantly, each postcard is numbered. One might say, packet 1 of 5,000, the next, packet 2 of 5,000, and so on. Here's the clever part. These thousands of postcards are then dumped into the internet's mail system. They don't have to travel together or even take the same route. Some might travel through an exchange point in Chicago, while others go through Dallas. The routers at every interchange act like high-speed mail sorters, reading the to address on each postcard and sending it along the most efficient path at that exact millisecond. As the postcards start arriving at your computer, your machine's job is to act as the recipient, checking the numbers and putting them all back in the correct order. If it realizes that postcard number 4812 is missing, it simply sends a message back to the server saying, "Hey, can you please resend that one?" This system is what makes the internet so powerful and resilient. It allows everyone's data to travel together efficiently, and it ensures that even if parts of the network are busy or broken, the message can still get through. Now we get to the final and most critical part of the journey, what's often called the last mile. This is the leg of the trip from your ISP's local hub to your actual house. This is where different technologies come into play, and it's why your friend across town might have much faster internet than you do. For many years, the most common method was DSL, which used the existing copper telephone lines that were already running into everyone's homes. A more common method today is cable internet, which uses the same thick coaxial cable that brings you your television channels. The internet signal is simply sent along the same wire, just on a different frequency or channel than your TV shows. The fastest and most modern connection is fiber to the home. This is where the ISP runs one of those incredibly fast fiber optic cables directly to a box on the side of your house, giving you a direct connection to the light-speed backbone. So, if the internet is this amazing light-speed network, why does your video still buffer sometimes? Or why do you experience lag in an online game? The answer is that internet speed is actually two different things, bandwidth and latency. The best way to understand them is to think of your internet connection as a highway. Bandwidth is the number of lanes on your highway. If you have a two-lane highway, you can only fit so many cars at once. But if you have a massive 12-lane superhighway, you can move a huge number of cars at the same time. High bandwidth is what you need for activities that involve moving a lot of data. like streaming a 4K movie or downloading a huge video game. You need a lot of lanes to get all that data to you quickly. When an internet company sells you a plan with a high number of megabits per second, they are selling you more lanes on your highway. But the number of lanes is only half the story. The other half is latency, which is the speed limit on that highway and the time it takes for a single car to get from its starting point to its destination. You could have a 12-lane superhighway, but if the speed limit is only 10 miles per hour, it's still going to take a long time for the first car to arrive. Low latency is critical for things that need to happen in real time, like video calls or competitive online gaming. In a game, you need your character to react the instant you press a button. That small data packet needs to travel to the game's server and back with as little delay as possible. That delay is latency, often measured as ping. So the perfect internet connection is a combination of both, a very wide highway with a very high speed limit. Regardless of whether the signal arrives as an electrical pulse over a copper wire or a flash of light through a glass fiber, it has to be converted into something your computer can understand. This is the job of your modem. The word modem is short for modulator demodulator. It's essentially a translator. Its one and only job is to take the specific type of signal coming from your ISP and translate it into a standard digital language that your devices can use. But the modem usually only provides one connection. To allow all of your devices, your laptop, your phone, your smart TV, to use that one internet connection, you need a router. The router is like the traffic cop for your house. It takes that single internet connection from the modem and creates your own private local network, which we call Wi-Fi. So how does your router do that? How does it take a physical connection and turn it into an invisible signal that fills your house? The answer is that your Wi-Fi router is essentially a sophisticated two-way radio station. Inside the router is a tiny radio transmitter that takes the digital data from your modem, the ones and zeros, and encodes it onto radio waves. It then broadcasts these waves out in all directions. Your laptop, phone, and other devices have their own tiny radio receivers and transmitters, which catch these waves, decode the information back into digital data, and send their own signals back to the router. It's all happening invisibly, thousands of times per second. But to avoid interfering with actual radio stations or your neighbor's network, Wi-Fi uses specific radio frequencies, or bands. You've probably seen these options before, 2.4 GHz and 5 GHz. The best way to understand the difference is to think of them as different kinds of voices. The 2.4 GHz band is like a low booming voice. It's powerful and can travel a long distance, easily passing through walls and floors. This is why you can often get a Wi-Fi signal from far away. The downside is that this band is very crowded. Your microwave, cordless phone, and many of your neighbor's routers are all talking on this frequency, which can slow it down. The 5 GHz band, on the other hand, is like a higher pitched, clearer voice. It can carry a lot more information, making it much, much faster than the 2.4 band. However, just like a high pitched voice, it doesn't travel as far and gets blocked more easily by solid objects like walls and furniture. This is why the 5 GHz connection is strongest when you're in the same room as your router. Most modern routers are dual band, meaning they broadcast on both frequencies at the same time, giving your devices the option to connect to the fast but short-range 5 GHz network when they're close, and switch to the slower but longer-range 2.4 GHz network when they're farther away. When you try to watch a video on your phone sends the request to the router, which sends it to the modem, which sends it on its incredible journey across the world. When the video data comes flying back, the router knows to send it specifically to your phone and not to the laptop in the other room. So that simple, instant click is actually the end of a long physical journey. A whisper that travels as light across oceans gets directed through massive digital airports and is finally translated and delivered to your screen, all in the blink of an eye.